tell you what I will do, so you will see my point of view. I'll break your walls with shotgun blast, I'll roll your head in broken glass, till you get my point of view. This is a bad circumstance, brought about by ignorance, so let me educate you. Chain your body hogtie style, drag it by half a mile, till you get my point of view. There'll be no judge or jury, man, get by while you can, 'cause this old man is haunting you, haunting you. I'm haunting you.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, the radio show all about comics. And I guess that was Percival Cook. I think that's the right person. Point of view. And I am joined by a very special guest this week, Al Columbia, who I hopefully... Hello. I got you there, Al?
Yep.
Awesome. Was that Percival Cook? Was that the right...
Yeah, Percival Cook.
It's a nice, calm way to start out the show. Well... Pushed the wrong button. Excuse me. Okay, so how are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
Doing good. Now, just to kind of bring people abreast to your work, I guess the most famous thing, most known thing, is probably the Biologic Show, and then a series of ongoing odd, I guess, interludes in 00.
Yes.
And Doghead. And I did not know this, silly me. You have a new thing in the new... Mome anthology.
Yeah, just a few images. Eric Reynolds and I were talking, and I sent him just a few images for the I guess the most recent Mome, and I'll have something in pretty much everyone after. So I have one coming out. I think I have another strip coming out in the next Mome, and one after that, and one after that.
And will this be kind of continuing the stuff you've been doing previous? Like the... is it Pym and Francie and that kind of stuff, or is it...
Yeah, there'll be a few Pym and Francie strips. There'll be a few old ones, ones that ran in The Stranger.
Oh, okay.
Paper in Seattle many years ago. And some new stuff.
I didn't even know you had stuff in The Stranger.
Yeah, a few strips. About 6 years ago.
Okay. And that was that when you were living in Seattle, or...?
No, I was living in Massachusetts at the time.
Okay. Now, I guess we'll start out by talking about the website that you've, I guess, recently relaunched a couple of months ago, was it? Or how recent was that?
I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe 4 months ago or something.
In the recent memory, we'll say that. Now, you've kind of previewing stuff on there for a while. You had, like, a daily comic?
Yeah, sort of. That in and of itself was also sort of a preview for a pretty big book that Fantagraphics is going to be putting out. Well, I guess it'll come out in about a year, but I'm kind of wrapping it up now. Sort of collection of 10 years' worth of material. And I kept that up for a couple months, and then it just became too tiring to, constantly throw up a new cartoon every day. And also, I just didn't want to end up, publishing the entire book online before it reached print. So,
well, it's a Flash, right? So it's pretty labor intensive.
I'm sorry?
The website, it's in Flash, am I right?
I think so. I don't know. It must, maybe.
You got someone else doing it for you?
No, I do it all myself. I don't know. I don't know what's what with it, you know. I guess if there's Flash on there, then, you know, it'd be a surprise to me.
I
don't even know what Flash is.
I think it's like the animation style, just the type of capturing
and
stuff.
Oh, yeah, that stuff. Oh, yeah, yeah, it has Flash then.
Okay. I can't even do any kind of programming, so I'd be like the worst to explain any of it. Now, it's a couple different components to the site. You've got the prints, you've got the music, and you've got kind of quick snippets, just one panels, just kind of previewing future stories. So I'd like to kind of cover all that stuff and then maybe go through some of your older work, the Zero Zeros and the Pogo Stick, and whatever else may rear its ugly head. So tell us about the music on there. Like, have you always been really into music, and like, what kind of involvement do you have in that?
Yeah, I've always liked music. The records, or I should say the singles, and on the site are all recorded by friends of mine that I've just known for years and years and years. You know, some going back as far as, you know, 15, 17 years ago. But, you know, I've been friends with them that long. And, you know, they've always recorded their own stuff. And when I put the website up, it just sort of started off very naturally. I believe Eric Reynolds, his band, The Reyes, I put stuff up there. And
that was the one I knew.
Yeah, slowly but surely, all my friends, they just had all these recordings, and I was just very lucky, really lucky guy to get them all and be able to put them on the site. So, and that's just kind of how it started off, and then I started doing sort of little covers for each single, and that kind of thing, and I have a lot more to put up. I just, I've been so busy with this book, I haven't been able to really tend to the website so much.
Well, how much, we'll talk about the book for a bit, because I'm curious, I didn't even know you had one coming out. I was talking to Eric on the weekend, he didn't even mention you had a new book coming out. So how much of this is new, how much is old, and where is it going? Like, are you kind of taking the old stories and moving, like, further into the little universe that it has, or?
Well, it basically will collect pretty much everything. Well, you know, I'm editing it right now, so not everything's going to go in, obviously, but it pretty much collects most of what I've done for the last 10 years, the material that hasn't seen print. And I may or may not reprint a few stories from Zero Zero and Blab. But it's pretty much material nobody has ever seen, and it'll probably be a pretty darn big book. And it's pretty much everything: paintings, sketches, comics, weird sort of photographic stuff, writing, you know, a whole bunch of stuff.
I saw the Hairlip Harry picture, and I love that, though. I guess that's a painting you were doing. Is that one of the occurring characters that will be in?
Yeah, he'll be in there.
Tell us about Hairlip Harry.
Well, I don't know what to say. He's born with a hair lip. His parents are siblings. He becomes famous, not for his hair lip, but for other reasons, and wildly famous, and there are all sorts of toys made of his likeness, and cartoons, and
so that was actually
TV shows.
That painting, I guess, was a toy, because I had the little windy thing in the back.
Yeah, toy. Yeah, but very decayed.
Now, I guess I'll go through, talk about some of the prints you have on the site. You had one before, which I really liked. I guess, I don't know if you sold it or not. I think it was Oligarchy?
Ollie the Oligarch?
Was that what it was? Okay.
Yeah.
I love that one. It's just like, I don't know, it's just a weird, like, I don't know, like a cartoony feast of, like, gory gluttony.
Yeah, I just, Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. It just sounded right to call it Ollie the Oligarch, because it just these men in sort of you know, black tie attire, sort of feasting on their own intestines, and wearing little kind of floppy golden jester crowns. I suppose just looked to me like it was a bunch of
the Feast of the High and Mighty.
Yeah, the Feast of the High and Mighty. Thank you. Yeah. Exactly right.
Now, a lot of the imagery you're using, it's like, seems like it's kind of like deconstructing old like cartooning notions, but like turning into like, you know, something really violent. Is that something where you like try and play with imagery, like try and do something, take something in old style and then push it to another level?
I suppose I see things in, I guess, well, you know, some people might consider to be, you know, otherwise generic or, you know, maybe even old cartoons that have been, you know, pillaged, you know, for many years now. There's something about them. I see imagery in these cartoons. I really don't know how to explain it. It just seems to come naturally. I guess it's just the sort of language I feel most comfortable speaking in. That's a tough one to answer. I suppose you're right. Yeah, I guess try to play. I don't really try to do anything. I don't really have any set. You know, like I'm going to take this cartoon and push it. You know, as far as it can go. It just seems to me the best way to convey the image I want to convey. You know, or get across, or the idea, or and.
Now, is the old animation something you've always kind of really been into? Like that 30s style? No.
No, not really. And I really haven't watched a whole lot of it either. I think I watched one Coco the Clown, like a whole bunch of cartoons, like in a couple nights sitting, and I watched some Betty Boops. But just to get a feeling of things, I don't really study things, you know, in great depth because I just get really bored after a while. Once I think I've soaked it up, I kind of just move on. So I haven't really studied this stuff. I did have a dream a long time ago as a child. I'm wondering if every cartoonist has a dream like this involving a cartoon character. But I was probably like 11 or 12, and I had a dream I had sex with Felix the Cat, and that was probably, you know, the closest. In the dream, it was in a bathroom, and the whole thing was like a cartoon bathroom. It was really strange. So that was actually my first real sort of, I don't know,
intuition towards it?
Intense encounter with that sort of cartoon, you know?
Well, for a 12-year-old, that strikes me that would have quite a lasting impression.
Oh, yeah, that he kind was of great, yeah. Felix was good.
Now, some of the other art and prints, I guess I'll talk about some of those. I mean, there's the one that has the, I guess, was a goat with a spear up its bum?
Sure.
And that one's kind of going along with the same theme, that kind of, I don't know, like early animation style. Now, the stuff, the Death and Destruction series.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of curious about those. Like, what are the original media for that? And, like, kind of what is the idea behind it?
Oh, like, they're watercolor and graphite, you know, and charcoals, inks. That's and I paint them on this fairly thick hot press illustration board, and the idea behind them, I believe they started off as backgrounds for a comic I was working on, and I can't remember the comic anymore. I can't remember the story, so I just have these images.
One thing I find really neat with the comics is that you do the really, like, detailed, deep stuff, like that Death and Destruction series, but then you'll also mix it with, like, really round, cartoony caricatures. Now, when you do that kind of stuff, are you still working together with the same thing, or is it something you kind of overlap afterwards?
Sometimes the characters will just be, it'll just be one piece, and other times I'll kind of just drop the characters in into the base. Is that the answer? That right? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Orange Sunshine, kind of the name you've given the site. I was trying to do a little research on it, and all I could find was, I guess it was LSD in the '60s that the Vietnam vets were using.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, for me, well, I had these two aunts when I was younger used to babysit for me, and I believe their first exposure to LSD was when they were, one was seven, one was nine. They were sort of dosed accidentally, and on a Halloween night, and I kind of started off their career with it. And they used to babysit for me and take me to all these sort of, I don't know, strange sort of biker parties in the woods and things like that. And I just have a lot of distinct memories of, you know, in the early 70s, a lot of, you know, a lot of hippie parties, a lot of stuff like that. So it's, I guess it's something near and dear to my heart, you know.
And that's actually kind of a reoccurring thing. I think one of the comics you have, Orange Sunshine, I can't remember which one it was. It was like right at the top of the first page of it. I'm looking through my stack of zero zeros. I can't remember which one. Now, so that's been an ongoing theme in your strips, though, to kind of like have that in there as part of, like, I guess the world of the Al Columbia comics.
What was that again? I'm sorry?
In one of the old zero zeros, you have that, like, an Orange Sunshine presentation. I think it's, in the one, August 95, with Seymour Sunshine and the Monkey Boy. And that one.
Oh, did it say Orange Sunshine back then? Yeah,
the method of Orange Sunshine it. Medicine. I was killing
Orange Sunshine Medicine, yeah. Yeah.
Now,
I guess, to me, cartoons are a lot like, and drawing them sometimes can be a lot like tripping out like that. And I don't know. It's really meaningless. It doesn't have too much to do with LSD, though that's, you know, where it comes from. I just like the way it sounds.
Yeah, it just kind of flows and just kind of goes through. And you actually use that kind of that orange color, like this really, like, I don't know, like kind of muted orange in some of your strips, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of like something you're going for? Like, because it's very, like, seldom colors used in the more cartoony stuff. Is that, like, an effect you're going for?
To use orange?
The kind of the muted tones. Like
muted tones. Well, it also has to do with, like, time constraints and just sort of last-minute decisions. I don't really go for anything. It's just sort of what I end up with. And a lot of times I consider it to be a mistake. As far as using the orange in the story, I believe you're talking about I Was Killing When Killing Wasn't Cool.
Yeah.
That was a very much a last-minute decision.
Okay.
And really wasn't sure how it was going to work out. As far as, like, muted tones and things like that, a lot of that is just when you photograph or scan black and white artwork, there are a lot of subtle gray, subtle, you know, reds and blues you'll see within the, even though it's painted in black and white. So a lot of those tones, I think, are just a byproduct of that just the way it's printed.
Now, is this your first post-biologic show strip? Because I think it's the earliest 00 I have here.
Yeah, that was actually right after, I believe, the second biologic show came out. And in the time between the two, I had just moved on to other, interests or styles and...
They're very different styles, and that's kind of the interesting thing. I'm curious about, like, that kind of that transition from with the biologic shows. It's a very, like, a violent, more rougher style, but with the from there, it's kind of a lot slicker, a lot cleaner.
Well, I went from working on big numbers, which is very slick. Everything was painted, including the characters, hyper realistic style, and I wanted nothing more to do with anything like that. You know, when I did the biologic show, it was almost like relearning how to draw, you know.
And it's more of kind of getting your own style.
Yeah, exactly. It was a constant metamorphosis. You know, it was just like a constant change, constant. And then I ended up slowly moving back towards using those hyper-realistic backgrounds that had, you know, been painting for big numbers. I sort of just went back to using those skills for, you know, I saw the opportunity to do a what I thought would be a cool comic, you know, that would look like a very old animated cartoon. And so the things I learned doing big numbers came in handy later on.
I guess with a strip like Alfred the Great is a great example of that.
Sure.
With the kind of the odd little guy with the magic tongue. Tell us about Alfred the Great.
Well, let's see. Alfred the Great is a circus freak. I did a story just sort of documenting his rise and fall. His talent is his tongue. He can juggle with his tongue. He can lift, hundreds of pounds with it. It's and his face is more or less disfigured into it's just literally a mouth, just a gaping mouth. And he was born in 1917, and he becomes famous right around 1933, and sort of loses his fame right around then too.
And he's in the Zero Zero. He's also on the cover of the Dirty Comics Stories Collection, I think.
Dirty Stories,
there we go.
Yeah.
Where he's, he's juggling sexual paraphernalia.
Actually, it's not chocolate pudding.
Something divine is used to.
What's that?
Something divine's used to.
Yes, right.
A la Pink Flamingos.
Sure, or 120 Days of Sodom.
Actually, that's a bit of a segue for me. I have some lit questions, because I don't know how, early you mind chatting about, but when I was reading Doghead...
Oh, God.
There's a couple of things that stuck out to me as lit references, and I'm curious. The God at the end, that Burroughs...
What is it? What was that?
At the end of Doghead, or the end of the second story, the character, is it Oliver, goes and talks to God, and it's written very Burroughs-esque.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I was pretty young, and I was just ripping it, everything off. I didn't think anyone knew about these people. I thought I was the only one, and I could get away with it. So it was just this. I learned pretty quick. Not to do that. I think I did that book. I was 19 or 20, and I really wasn't very formed as an artist or anything. I mean, that's no excuse, but. I don't think anyone ever laid down the law with me about that.
Well, I think Burroughs in himself will be happy to be used as a character.
Sure. I think I had just read Naked Lunch, and I remember I really liked it at the time.
What kind of literature are you into?
Well, I haven't read in a while. I just don't have the concentration for it, but I really like... I like a lot of Russian authors. I used to really be big into Nabokov and Dostoevsky. I guess I went through that phase, or I guess it kind of is a phase. All kinds of stuff. I've read a lot of stuff. Like I said, I haven't read in a couple of years, so there's just nothing off the top of my head.
I understand. I don't read anything that's not schoolwork or comics lately, it seems like.
Yeah, I just can't imagine sitting down reading a book. Oh, I did read the last Harry Potter book.
How was it?
Oh, I thought it was really good. Actually, I think it was really dark and very adult, and not at all what I expected.
From what I heard, they're getting darker and darker and darker.
Yeah, it was quite dark. Yeah.
Now, a lot of the themes in your work is pretty dark. I mean, you have an ongoing use of imagery of violent births. And knives and stuff like that. I'm curious, where those themes come from.
I don't know.
Just something that kind of sticks out and reusing. Not reusing, but thematic. Because I'm curious, because you have a lot of, really interesting, multi-limbed characters with, all these knives flailing. Is it just that they look awesome, or...
I guess there's something about chopping up cartoon characters that's an awful lot of fun. I don't know. I guess that's the only explanation, really. Get underneath there and see their bones and their,
what makes them?
Their anatomy and, they're not necessarily filled with jelly, so it's interesting to see what they're made of.
Kind of going into a little further into the characters.
Sure. And it's also a nice filter. Now, if I were to draw that stuff, or even film something like that, I don't think I could do it. Something about, bringing it too close to you know, if it's too realistic, if it's too, you know, representational, it's just, it's disturbing, but in a much different way. It's a lot harder. Something easier about that little cartoon filter. It makes it easier to draw, but I still get weird feelings sometimes when I'm doing it. It still gives me a uncomfortable feeling.
And you're kind of surprised with yourself at what you can put out.
Sure, sure. And I know there are sometimes cartoons who do disturbing work, and you know that God bless them. They say, you know, well, I find that work beautiful, you know, or I find that kind of thing beautiful, and I don't. You know, I just find it really disturbing. You know, and really weird. But
another kind of thing I notice, it seems like you've kind of created a universe where all the characters interact more or less in odd, different situations. It seems, is that an intention? Like a kind of like your own. I don't want to use this example, but like Palomar, where it's like there's this wide range of interacting characters. Do you kind of have that that kind of idea in your head, or is it just...
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, I have a... There is a sort of... There are a few worlds which sort of cross over. You'll probably see more of that in this big book I'm putting together.
Because I was reading... whatchamacallit, the story today. The Blood Clot Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Today. And you've got the Siamese twin sisters they have the, you know, the two heads. And I've noticed them in a bunch of stuff, especially like the is it the Peloria strip, Peloria in the second Biologic show.
Yeah, I got the idea from a cartoonist named Rick Grimes, who used to do these great stories for an anthology called Taboo. I think he's like one of the greatest, most underrated cartoonists I've ever, you know. And he just had this really cool image of, actually it was three-headed twins, like some kind of, I don't know, axe or butcher knife, and I just, you know, quickly stole it, and you know, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever, how can I not, you know, use it, and so, you know, I guess I owe a little debt to him for the idea, but then again, you know, I probably the, you know, 19th or 20th cartoonist Fantagraphics has published who has a two-headed twin of some kind, so you know.
Always goes back to the Siam brothers, or I guess they have full body.
Right.
Now, your most recent release, other than I guess the couple of panels in the MOME, is the Pogo Stick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally you're full writer artist. What was the attraction of working with Ethan on this project?
Well, I really liked the strip he did in 00, I believe it was called Teddy, and involved a...
Was that the really bluish one?
No, it's a very red one, very bloody one, where he stomps what he thinks is a... Really got me.
Okay, yeah.
He develops this whole fantasy about, you know, this little baby, and then he realizes it's a rubber toy at the end, and then he throws it on the ground, stomps on it, and it starts to bleed. And I just thought that was really brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote him an email, tell him I liked it, and we just started to correspond, and I had some notes for a story. I said, hey, if you ever, you know, have some free time, if you want to work on something, and just sort of developed from there, and I started to write actual scripts, because the notes were a little too, I don't know, vague, or, yeah, I could see that it was going to be an awfully weird story if we relied just on the notes. So I just tightened it up, made a script, and... you know, we just went from there.
No, it kind of makes me think of I don't know. You read Schizo?
By, no, I don't. I've read the first two.
It kind of reminds me of number three, just in the way that Brunetti fantasized about what he'd do to all his coworkers, and it just kind of seemed like what would happen if the person actually did what they wanted to.
Yeah, I think I've seen some panels from that. I can see.
Not that it's the
I
same
can see
thing.
At least even a visual similarity, possibly, but.
It's just that kind of that psychological, like, step out and just kind of, like, I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for is, but it's not the art style I'm talking about, it's just that feeling. Because it is a different art style. The neat thing I really like about Ethan's work in this is kind of like a post-pop, it just seems like it's so, like, multi-layered.
Oh, yeah, he does a lot of, I mean, it's really intricate work Ethan's doing with I think it's disarmingly simple. I mean, you first look at it, just you know, you really take a good look at that stuff. It's you know, it's a hell of a lot of work he puts into it, and I really love it. You know,
it's quite neat, and it's I don't know, it's just what you said. It's that simple, and then when you actually sit down and read it, it's pretty filthy. I mean, the guy's going through the office and listener discretion, kids, and you know, it just walks by all the secretaries and calls them fucking horrors. And
yeah, well, he's not. Well, the idea was that he wasn't in any way supposed to be whatever, a quote unquote loser. It's just the opposite of that. He's just in that particular the first two issues, he's just sort of having a kind of a massive breakdown,
mm-hmm.
sort of going a little nutty, but you soon discover why. Ethan is actually working on the third issue.
Oh, really? I thought
right
it was
now, yeah.
I thought the second one was it was done.
No, there's going to be six.
Oh, wow.
There's just a lot of, we're both became very busy with different things, and so, yeah, the third issue will be 48 pages. It'll basically be like the third and fourth, we're going to make it a pretty big issue, sort of make up for the lost time.
Well, I look forward to that. I'm very happy. Now, in your own work, I've read that you're very meticulous, and you have actually quite a volume of work, just not necessarily published.
Yeah.
Eric was saying, yep. Yeah, I've got like the whole full sketchbooks and stuff. Like, do you kind of go through a process to get it to that refined look that you're going for?
Well, not too big a process, just the process of actually finishing something, which can be difficult. Yeah, sometimes I set up something and it's just, I realize it's just going to be an enormous amount of work, and do I really like it that much? Or, you know, there'll be a distraction or two that will just sort of, you know, make me lose whatever momentum I have on a project. And for me, that's difficult because I need to maintain that in order to finish something. So once I lose it, I kind of just move on to something else and hope that I can maintain it then, you know, with the new thing. And
it all just falls to the wayside, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, you know, just I have fragments of stories and imagery and ideas, and that's what will comprise the, you know,
the voluminous epic coming out.
Yeah, it's a big volume. Yeah,
the big volume. Any tentative title?
It's called The Land of Broken Hearts.
Okay, nice. I look forward. What kind of influence do you bring into your work that have stuck for you? Like, I was just thinking, looking at some of the stuff, like you use like the recurring name Crowley, and I kind of some of the stuff the kind of reminds you of that, like, I don't know, like post-industrial, in that kind of British German sense, like that throbbing gristle. I don't know if that's something that ever interests you at all, or if it's just me.
Throbbing gristle.
Yeah.
Is that a band?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard them. I'm not really. I don't really listen to very much industrial music. I
was just thinking of. Just the feeling that you get, not necessarily like
sure,
the music,
sure.
Like, you know.
Yeah, that's a compliment, I'm sure. I just haven't heard the band, you know. I think it's hard to say what influences me now. I don't really, you know, I don't really watch too many movies. I don't really, like I say, I don't really read too many books anymore. It's sort of, at this point, I think I'm just very much influenced by the events of my own life and, you know, people around me. You know, there's always something you hear throughout the day which helps you out with what you're working on, or somebody might say something, and this, you know, kind of turns everything in a different direction. I don't know. It's hard to say what influences me now. I think more just like kind of my friends and the family and.
Now
myself, I guess.
You're kind of you're I'm kind of curious about how you develop a story, because you're talking about kind of needing that momentum and kind of it falling to the wayside. Do you start out with kind of that diary sketchbook? Because I heard about you going to Fantagraphics and like with a stack of stuff to scan in. Is that kind of like your process is working there and kind of plotting it out, or is it do work?
It starts off with just one image, and then it'll move to a couple pages, but then I just start writing in a notebook, and I you know, just keep writing down ideas for the story until I have it, you know, I guess some idea of what the whole thing is going to be like. I don't work very well going panel to panel to see what happens next kind of thing. I just kind of, not even an outline, but just ideas, and they're all kind of out of order, and then I have to kind of put them together, and I jump all over the place. I don't start with one, page one, page two, page three. I'll start, you know, by the time I get to page four, I jump ahead to page 30, and that kind of thing.
And then you kind of put it together.
Yeah, that's the process I have. I don't know why. It's sort of like a jigsaw puzzle.
Now, with some of the 00 stuff, with your art, there are some where there's panels where you've got, like, background characters fuzzy and the forward character, in focus. Do you utilize computers, post artwork?
For a couple strips, for two strips, I did the technique you're speaking of. It's just a really simple thing where I noticed in a lot of animation books I pick up that I just really like the quality of the line, and when they reproduce still frames, they're always a little blurry, a little blown out, and I just want to see if I could achieve the same effect. And you can achieve it manually. I mean, you don't need a computer to do that. You know, you can just photograph the stuff and get the same thing. So it's just literally two simple little moves on the computer, and it's done. I don't really use the computer too much, you know.
That was something I was curious about. There's a lot of neat refinement and detail in it. So, there's one piece I saw somewhere, I don't know where, online. I saw it in a rip. Part of the original in 00 number 20, Amnesia, near the end of the story, the guy talking to the group of people and stuff.
Yep.
And I don't know if it was original or that. I saw something looks like that. Maybe it was a sketch out for it where it was a lot more just black and white and less of the muted tones to it.
Oh, sure, yeah. What I did was I just sort of applied a layer of second color to one of the it was scanned in full color, and then I just got rid of cyan and magenta and left yellow, and then we assigned that yellow file or that yellow layer a Pantone color. So I that's how I did that, and I just sort of and use that yellow as just sort of way to tone certain areas and that kind of thing.
You did the album cover for the Postal Service. Mm-hmm. Am I correct? How did that happen? Like, pretty popular album?
Yeah, strangely, yeah. I got a gold record for it, which is the weirdest thing.
Wow.
Yeah, they sent me a gold record, which everyone made such a big deal of. I kicked it in with my foot one day. It's great now. It looks really cool. Big crack in the frame.
I have a friend who has a gold record, and they actually tried playing it. It didn't play so well.
You're supposed to pretty much mess up your first gold record, right? I mean, everyone's got one, right? Pour wax on it, do whatever.
Frisbee.
That Jeff Kleinsmith called me from Sub Pop and said he had a record. He's interested in having me do the artwork for it, and he sent it to me, and I really loved it, and really tried to do it justice, I guess.
Was that your first time doing album artwork?
No. I've done little things here and there.
Anything?
But not much.
Anything?
I generally don't take on too much illustration work.
No, you're more of kind of working on your own passion, not really doing graphic design or anything like that.
Yeah, for me it just doesn't work. I get it. Just I just find it to be a terrible experience.
Is that kind of something left over from working on big numbers where you've kind of gotten this, like, epic monumental task and kind of made you want to kind of work on your own thing and not want to do something like that?
Probably, yeah. I mean, Big Numbers was just about the most difficult thing I think any artist could attempt to do. I mean, we're talking, I think there's something like 12 panels per page, and on each page you're painting the character. You're not just drawing them, you're painting the characters, and you have to pay attention to the lighting, and then you got the backgrounds, and Alan Moore is very specific about every detail of each panel. So in some ways it felt very confining, and I just lost interest in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing that struck me with the pogo stick, where it's normally, a tour is the right word. Is that the right word? Where you kind of have control over all parts of your comic, and then you go and write something for someone else.
Sure. Ethan and I just work well together. He's he anticipates certain things. He's got good ideas, and we kind of both covered each other's backs, I guess, with it, you know what I mean? I liked it. It was a good experience,
It's good when you can get a good working relationship with someone to kind of find the strengths in each other's stuff.
Now, at this point, I don't even write a script for him. I just tell him basically what's going on over the phone, and he just goes ahead and does it.
Well, I look forward to volumes three and four, and then more in the upcoming years, I guess.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully. Now, a couple questions about some early stuff. My friend pulled out some of his old comics, and From Beyond, was that your first published work?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And I guess Lucian was your pen name at one point?
yeah.
Did you have your...
go ahead.
Oh, was that during some gothic days?
No, that's my great-grandfather's name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Neat.
I never had any gothic days. This is the strangest thing, I suppose. I seem to attract a lot of gothic people, and, I've never quite been very gothic. I'm not even really sure what it is, what to be gothic means,
Well, that's the thing, and interesting listening to the music on the website, it's very relaxed. It kind of reminds you of like stuff like Neutromilk Hotel or like Destroyer, some stuff like that, where it's very, introspective, but not like spooky.
Right.
I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I really feel lucky about the music on the site. Everyone I have up there is really great stuff, and, they pretty much do it all themselves. And, I've recorded with them myself for years and years. We always used to use 4-tracks, and then we moved on to this and that and the other thing. And
now, what are the stuff on there? Is there anything on there that you doing music?
Is there any music on there by me?
Because I know you're in the Action Suits at one point many years ago.
Yeah, there is music on there by me, but I can't tell you who it is.
Okay. We'll leave it up to the listeners to find out. We know it's not the
really that big a secret, but I just prefer not to say anything.
we'll let people investigate and see if they can figure it out for themselves.
Sure.
Now, one thing I'm curious about, and I don't blame if you don't really want to talk about, what did you think? I don't know if you read Eddie Campbell's thing about Big Numbers, and what do you think about someone writing about experience you went through and kind of just telling your story?
Well, I thought it was great when he first sent it to me, and then we started to correspond. What I guess he didn't tell me he was going to do is use my emails in the book. That was a little strange, but otherwise, I like it. What can you do? It's his book.
Yeah. Okay, I was just curious.
I mean, I like that he drew me with a smiley face. I told him I would have paid him money to draw me that way.
With the smiley face?
Yeah. That was great.
Now, I've got some other stuff. A couple of questions about some of the characters. In Doghead, the vampire character, looks a little bit like Frank Black before, I guess he bulked up. Is that correct?
Let me think. Which character?
The vampire character comes in and offers the different ways for Oliver to kill himself.
That's actually my uncle, Ace.
Oh, okay.
His name is Ace. That's actually, I took pictures of my uncle Ace. I guess if it looked like Frank Black, it was unintentional. Not to say I haven't drawn Frank Black or Black Frank.
I just figured it was because you had the with apologies to him in the back.
Oh, I think that was because I called one of the stories Broken Face.
Oh, okay.
Something like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Oh, I see that. Yeah.
I grew up with the Pixies. I was such a gigantic Pixies fan. And I still am. I think they're like the greatest band ever. So.
Did you go and see them on their tour?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Well, I heard
it. Chance.
I missed it as well, but I heard it was fabulous. I have a bootleg on the shows, and it's quite tight.
I was really obsessed with them. I actually started to do a kind of a cartoon about them, like their history, and but kind of mixing it with some mystical elements, and like it's just it's really cool. I guess it's like a little thesis, a little cartoon.
Oh wow!
On the Pixies, which I hope to finish up someday.
I guess that won't be in the big epic.
Pieces of it will be. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other kind of stuff like that? Because that's quite different from what you normally do with the, the universe of...
Let's see, there's, I became obsessed with Lizzie Borden for a little while. There's some stuff on Lizzie Borden. I actually visited her house, which is still preserved. It looks exactly how it did when she lived there. And, it was really creepy. The house was so confining, and there, you could just tell why she flipped out. I mean, aside from whatever personal issues she had with her folks, you know, it's just there's no privacy whatsoever. Everything, all the rooms are really tiny, and yeah, it was really creepy. But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the book that may not surprise you. I don't know.
Some that may appear, some that may not.
Yeah, it's the book is essentially, could in a way be just a big book of previews for even more stuff. I mean, I don't know, you know. It's kind of cool how it's coming together. I mean, you almost, it alludes to something bigger. Like each fragment, you know, you get a sense of a bigger story, almost to the point where you might not even necessarily need to see the rest of it.
That's the kind of thing that strikes me with a lot of stories in the 00 are kind of like that. Like, I guess, is it the Alfred the Great story where at the end says, and this isn't all, you know, and there's more to come.
Yeah.
I guess the fill-in in between. Now, on the website, you have the funny incest stories, the chopped-up people, and the fun with Blackie Black Church. Are those all stuff that are going to appear in that book, or is that something
yeah.
you're just kind of...
Yeah, all that stuff's going to appear in the book, yeah.
That was just something I was so curious, because they're all quite different imagery. Are they all going to kind of be that kind of similar art style that you have on the website, or what are we looking, going to see?
Yeah, you'll see work that is, that you've seen on the website, or like you've seen on the website, and you'll also, you'll see a lot of things you haven't seen before.
Funny incest stories, I'm curious about that one, because that's... I think that's quite different from most of the other art style they use. It seems more, I don't know, it's like straightforward,
mm-hmm.
less style within it.
Yeah, that was a style I developed while working on a project with the comedian David Cross. We had started a comic book project together.
Oh, wow.
And I ended up with that style. I just really wanted to do something that was, yeah, essentially... had no style, and if a style were to emerge, it would just emerge through, you know, the conservative nature of, you know, so, you know, that's where that came from, and I just start to do other little stories in that style, and or lack of style, or...
Is there anything, like, that we should check out that I maybe haven't mentioned? I think I've gathered gone over a pretty... quantifiable amount of your work.
Well, I have a porn video coming out. So, you want to check that out? No.
Well, one of the guys in town in Vancouver is doing the Coming of Jesus porn movie.
Yeah?
It's
mine's better.
I'll have to take your word for it.
No, I think you pretty much covered everything. I can't think of anything.
Well, I look forward to more stuff, and I think just to remind people, it's El Columbia we're talking to, and you got the website, elcolumbia.com, and the book that will come out one day from Fantagraphics. Well, I'm curious, I got probably about 3 or 4 minutes left. What are some other stuff you've been working on personally that hasn't necessarily been comic strips, or is it pretty much all just going into fragments of comics?
I'm working on a comic book called Satanic Granny Gangbang Comics, and I'm doing a couple pages for the new or the upcoming Kramer Ergot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know that book. That's a nice book. That's going to be the huge, huge one.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
How big is the page supposed to be?
I think it's 16 by 21 or something like that. But I think I'm going to do it so you have to flip the book sideways so it'll be even bigger. And it'll be essentially take up 4 of the pages, but it'll only be like, I think, a 2-page strip, but really big.
Is it the originals that are you doing in parts, or is it just one big page?
No, it'll be a strip. It'll be, it'll have panels and it'll be a little story.
No, I'm just saying, if it's 16 by 21... Do you do the original of that?
I'm sorry. I'm going to do the original, pretty much exact size, the actual size that'll be printed.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited about that. I've heard lots of good things come up from the next Kramer's Ergot book. I'm a fan of the series so far, so it's good stuff.
Yeah, and that, and there'll be stuff in Eric Reynolds and Malm.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it, really.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us this week.
Yeah, thank you.
And as I said, big fan of the work. I'm looking forward to more work, and I think everyone else is as well. And for the next time the Comics Journal has a Whatever Happened to El Columbia, we can send them to this. How do you feel about that coming up, actually? How do you feel about, I don't know if you ever see the people do the Whatever Happened to El Columbia threads on the Journal message board.
Oh, it's infuriating. No, I don't really care of it. You know, it is strange. Every time I check, I get courage to sort of check out those message boards. You know, I'll always see something like that. Not so much anymore, but for a long while it was, it was kind of funny.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. That was El Columbia. Check out his stuff. From what stuff you can get is 00, the new Moam. I know Fantagraphics pretty much has all the 00s in stock, so you can check out those. And of course, Moam is one of my favorite anthologies from anywhere right now. I'm loving it, and I think it's great. I think everyone should check out Moam. And if you haven't, why not? Next week, my guest will be the publisher of First Second Books. They're publishing a lot of great translations, and speaking of Eddie Campbell, he has a new book coming out by them soon. But I forgot his name. I'm a horrible, horrible, horrible person. Thank you, Elle, for coming and joining us so much. And a week after that, I think it might be Gary Groth and Kim Thompson. I was talking to them at the comic convention in Seattle I went to on the weekend. It was fun. Lots of people dressed up as superheroes. Yada, yada, yada. I don't know. I think I'm developing issues with people that dress up in superhero costumes. I don't know what it is. But obviously, after going to that convention, my cementing love in alternative comics and alternative comic artists is continuing, because they were by far the nicest people there. Some of the people were really nice. Actually, Ed Brubaker, who will be joining us at the end of the month, he was awesome. I got him to sign my Real Stuff book and a couple other things. Got some nice pages by Stefan Guidano, who I think whose stuff is awesome, Gotham Central. Once again, check out El Columbia's work, elcolumbia.com, and the fine folks at Fantagraphics have plenty of stuff to check out. And I'm going to end up with another track by Percival Cook. The track is called 13 Dog Loose. Dog Loose. Here we go. Okay, Inkstud up next, Crimes and Treason, CITR 101.9 in Vancouver, UBC.
3, 4.
Yes, like, you don't have to look. Yeah.
is a dog loose in the wood?
Dog loose in the wood. There's a dog loose in the wood.
There's a dog loose in the wood.
There's a dog loose in the wood. There's a dog loose in the wood. Dog loose in the wood.